Okay, let's clear the deck. Coming in the door, Bob and Ray.
Don't break up now.
Oh, we'll try not to.
Well, actually, we
By
came,
the way, I'm breaking up.
We came in a little while ago. We've been sitting here doing our work.
Filling in all the O's on the front page of the newspaper. And let's see what we have planned today. Well, we have Tippy, the Wonder Dog.
That's going to be our first feature, right?
Well, what are you waiting for?
Nothing. Go ahead. Mushies, the great new cereal that gets soggy even without milk or cream, brings you another exciting story of adventure starring Tippy the Wonder Dog. As we look in on the isolated cabin of Grandpa Witherspoon today, we find most of the surrounding valley asleep under a dark, moonless sky. But inside, Gramps is tossing fitfully on his cot as little Jasper stands by the front window, staring out into the inky blackness. Suddenly, the boy turns and speaks.
It sure is dark outside tonight, Gramps.
Son, darn it all, I know it's dark outside. It's dark in here, too. I sure wish I'd never sent that fool dog of yours to pick up the new part I need to fix the electric generator.
Gee, Gramps, you shouldn't get upset with Tippy. That new generator part was supposed to come in the evening train. And I just heard the train whistle a few minutes ago.
Well, that was tonight's evening train you heard. I sent that fool dog to meet the evening train that went through last Thursday. He's never going to come back at all.
Oh, sure he is, Gramps. Tippy never lets us down in time of a great crisis. Why, he's the bravest, the smartest dog in the whole wide world.
Well, consarn it all, where is he then?
Well, hark, I think I see a shadowy figure loping up the trail now. Here, Tippy, Tippy, Tippy.
Yeah, give me that new generator part so we can get some lights on in here.
I'm sorry, Gramps, that wasn't Tippy I saw. It was just the Shutterman's Pekingese headed home from the library with a manual on how to repair Studebaker trucks.
Consarn it all, that Pekingese only got legs 5 inches long, but he can be sent out on errands I'd never trust to that fool Tippy.
Don't lose faith, Gramps. The freight agent at the depot probably has a lot of papers for Tippy to sign before he could get the package. But it'll be okay. Tippy's the brightest, the smart... Wait, I see him coming now. Here, Tippy, Tippy, Tippy. Come on, boy.
Well, consarn it all. Where's the fool dog?
Oh, it wasn't Tippy after all, Gramps. It was that St. Bernard that hangs around the ski lodge. He was headed back up that way, dragging a lost skier behind him.
Yeah, every dog in the neighborhood can be sent out on a simple chore except that fool mutt of yours.
Don't say that, Gramps. I know you're upset because it's been dark in here for almost a week, but Tippy's the finest, the smartest dog in the whole wide world. And I just know... Wait. I see him for sure now. Come on in, Tippy. That's a good boy.
Well, consarn it all. It's high time he got here. Now, give me that new part for the generator.
Well, I guess Tippy didn't have room in his mouth to carry it, Gramps. See, he fetched that big stick I was throwing for him out in the yard.
Consarn it all. I'm going to teach that fool dog what
No, wait, Gramps. Don't you understand? Tippy's trying to help us gather firewood so we can light the cabin without fixing the generator. We never thought of that, but he did. Gosh. Tippy sure is the finest, smartest dog in the whole wide world.
Today's thrilling dramatic action has all been brought to you by Mushies, the great new cereal that gets soggy even without milk or cream. Join us again soon for another amazing adventure of Tippy the Wonder Dog. Backstage, Noble Wife, the story of America's favorite family of the footlights and of their fight for security and happiness against the concrete heart of Broadway. In our last episode, Greg hit upon the idea of seeking help from the American Embassy in finding Mary. And it's a short time later now as we see Harry, Greg, Pop, and Calvin on the sidewalk outside the Hotel Raphael. As we hear.
Well, now, I think they said, Greg, we go straight down here. And then we go over, take the second street on our left, and then just keep going up till you see like a park. And then they said when you come to the edge of the park, go right, and then look for the flag.
Well, it should be fairly easy. Let's go. Come on, Pop.
Could you repeat that for me?
Yeah, I'm right with you. Just go over it once more, Calvin, so we have it all down in our heads.
All right. I think they said that we'd come out here, we'd go right for two or three blocks, then we see a park. Then we go left around the park, and we come to a right turn.
Yes.
Then we keep going till we see a flag.
Well, all in all, it's not more than a couple blocks away then, really, huh?
Well, I don't know. I'm not quite clear on those instructions, but
well,
I think that's right.
Start off this way, anyway.
Well, follow me. It's like deja vu, anyway.
You feel like you've been to the American Embassy before, Calvin?
Yeah, I feel I've been here several times. Just the Rome just seems that the whole thing seems I've been here before.
Uh-huh.
Just the air and the whole atmosphere is as though I've been here before.
Well, we have been to Rome before.
You know, that's called deja vu.
Yeah, I know it's deja vu, Mr. Marlowe.
The idea that you've been to the same place before.
Yeah. What's that?
Look, over there's a park. Would that be it?
That's it, sure.
All
that's
right.
The park.
We turn right at the park.
Or left. I forget now.
Well, it can make a big difference.
Makes a big difference, right or left. I mean, it's all together, right or wrong. You either go right or you go left. I mean, there's no either or.
What do you remember from your deja vu?
Well, let's see. I don't remember specifically anything deja vu. Just that I've been around this park before.
Well, when you try to
specifically
remember, you can't do it.
What's that?
When you try to specifically remember something from your deja vu, you can't do it. It's got to come to you automatically.
Yeah. Well, let's just keep looking for the flag. That's the easiest thing.
I tell you what we could do. We could split up, and two of us could go to the left, and two of us could go to the right.
Well, I don't know. I'm afraid the two who made the wrong direction would get lost.
Well, we could put a time limit on it. Let the two who don't find the embassy return to the hotel and wait for the other two, who will find the embassy.
All right. That's all right.
That's a pretty good idea, Harry.
Let me see how we can work this. Harry, you stay with me. And
all right.
Bradley and Pop, you go right, and we'll go left.
All right. Very good. We'll see you back at the hotel. If we're first, or if you're first, you'll see us back.
Wait a minute. I forget what we're going for.
We're trying to find the American Embassy.
Oh, that's right. Now, supposing we get to the American Embassy, what are we going to do when we get there?
Tell them Mary is missing and ask them for their help.
All right.
And so, our four friends decide to split up, two going in one direction and two in the other. Which two will find the American Embassy? Be sure and join us tomorrow when we'll hear Calvin say,
Pop! Oh, Pop!
That's tomorrow in the next exciting episode of Mary Backstage Noble Wife. Word Carr speaking.
You haven't driven it around.
I guess it's time that we talk to Fred Feldman, or he talks to us and tells us how traffic looks from helicopter 710. Fred?
Okay, either way, I'll talk to you. You talk to me and to everybody. Very hearty good afternoon and welcome aboard 710. Despite over a 20-mile-an-hour wind from the south, it's very nice flying up here this afternoon with visibility very good, just a touch of smaze around, but very nice up here. And getting down to the ground so far, we seem to be off to one of those relatively nice, peaceful starts around the city. The FDR Drive, just a bit heavy, 30s up through the 50s. Above that, we're looking good. Northbound up to and over the Willis Avenue Bridge. And if you're heading downtown on the drive, you will meet some delays from the 90s down into the 70s, but all lanes are open at the moment. For the troops in the lower Bronx, we have good news prevailing here. The elevated Bruckner Expressway, not too bad, getting up toward Hunts Point, just a bit slow. Now, Major Deegan, good in both directions at the lower end. On the cross Bronx, we are starting to just now develop some delays, starting eastbound away from the Harlem River, but all lanes are open, getting out and over to the area of Cortona Park and the middle of the Bronx. Out in Queens, the Grand Central, good out to and past home plate, which is helicopter 710's home, away from home. Long Island Expressway, normal delays getting out to Central Queens. At the Midtown Tunnel, it's about medium getting out of town. Lower deck of the 59th Street Bridge, very heavy. Upper BQE, quite heavy getting up toward the Kosciuszko Bridge. But as of a few minutes ago, all lanes were open. We're off to a pretty nice start, and the Harlem River Drive is good, too, gentlemen.
Okay, Fred, the Long Island reports that because of earlier troubles, the 337 Huntington to Port Jefferson is running 40 minutes late. That's due to arrive at 5:10, just a half hour from now. And for the same reason, the 408 from Port Jefferson to Huntington is also 40 minutes behind time, and that will arrive at 5:39, about an hour from now.
And we'll have squad car 119 in 1 minute. And now the makers of Einbinder Flypaper, a name you've gradually grown to trust over the course of three generations, invite you to ride with the men of squad car 119.
My name's Sam Finch. Me and my partner, Ralph R. Kruger, Jr., are the unsung heroes of the police force. We ride a prowl car at night. Sometimes we turn on the parking lights when we get out. Other times we forget to. Either way, we're always on the lookout for trouble. The other evening, we just taken delivery on a new squad car to replace the old model when my partner, Ralph R. Kruger, Jr., turned to me and said,
"Well, let's start it up and see how it runs, Sam. The square key should be the one for the ignition."
"Yeah, that's pretty much the way I had it figured, Ralph R., Jr. But there's no square key that came with this car. One of them's diamond-shaped, the other one's kind of oval."
"Well, I'd bet the diamond-shaped one fits the ignition, Sam. Diamond-shaped is closer to square than oval."
"Yeah, that's pretty much the way I had it figured. Worth a try, anyway."
"Listen to that, Sam. Purrs like a kitten. I've never thought changing the shape of the ignition key could make that much difference in our car runs."
"Yeah, well, they make improvements all the time."
"Calling car 119. Car 119, assist a motorist stranded on the center divider of the Santa Monica Freeway between Fairfax and La Brea. That's the Santa Monica between Fairfax and La Brea."
"Santa Monica between Fairfax and La Brea, huh?"
"That's us, Sam. Let's roll."
"I don't think we ought to rush into this, Ralph R. Jr. We'll probably need a toolkit to help out a stranded motorist, and I'm not sure we got one in the trunk of this new car."
"Well, we better take a look, Sam. The round key should be the one that fits the trunk."
"Yeah, that's pretty much the way I had it figured. But there's no round key that came with this car. One of them's diamond-shaped, the other one's kind of oval."
"Well, I'd bet the one that's kind of oval fits the trunk, Sam. Kind of oval is closer to round than diamond-shaped."
"Yeah, yeah, that's pretty much the way I had it figured. Then I remembered that Studebaker we had when we were rookies. On that car, the square key fit the ignition and the trunk, too."
"I know, Sam, but they've made a lot of improvements in squad cars since then. This new one doesn't even have a square key. Just one that's diamond-shaped and one that's kind of oval."
"And you think it's probably the oval one that fits the trunk, huh?"
"It's hard to say, Sam. On that old Studebaker, the same key that fit the ignition fit the trunk, too. And that old Studebaker was the best squad car we ever had."
"Yeah, you can say that again. Really served us well."
"Car 119, car 119, disregard that call to assist a motorist stranded on the center divider of the Santa Monica Freeway. The case has been handled by the men of squad car 83. The stranded motorist has been advised of his rights, booked, and brought to trial. In 1 minute, the results of that trial."
And while we're waiting to hear the outcome of today's exciting case, here's a timely reminder for housewives from the makers of Einbinder Flypaper. Ladies, the time for spring house cleaning is upon us again, and I'm sure you're remembering to do all those obvious yearly chores, such as putting new insulation in the attic, patching broken windows, and changing the litter in the cat box. But have you ever thought that your flypaper may need replacing too? Better check it today. And if it seems to have lost some of its original stickum, replace it with genuine Einbinder flypaper, the brand you've gradually grown to trust over the course of three generations.
That stranded motorist picked up on the Santa Monica Freeway was convicted on one count each of obstructing traffic, trespassing on public property, and loitering. He's now serving a life sentence without possibility of parole in the California State Prison.
And so another desperate criminal is brought to justice thanks to the unsung heroes of the police force, the men who ride the squad cars at night.
Know how much I'm needing someone like you by my side. I just can't go on this way. Why did we part? Soon I'll have a breaking back to match my heart. Ladybugs will meet their men, and though I know you'll be gone then, will you miss me and my lawn then, when the crabgrass blooms again? There are many ways to treat crabgrass, ways that are tried and true. You can take it from an old hand, as I've tried quite a few. Now there's crab kill and there's no crab, crab no more and crab gone. You simply buy them at the store and then you sprinkle them on. Some folks dig it up by the roots until they're blue in the face. But for every root they dig up, two roots grow in its place. Others have another way, a way that's guaranteed. They choke off all their crabgrass by planting some other weed. Some folks have a practical plan that's final and complete. They cover up a crabgrass lawn with a sidewalk of concrete. But my way is the best way, and I know what I'm speaking of. The best way to work on crabgrass is beside the one you love. Will your thoughts be with me then? Will you be a sympathizer when I'm spreading fertilizer? When the crabgrass blooms again.
Now the Auburn Motor Company, maker of fine cars up to but not including 1938, brings you another episode of The Gathering Dusk, a heartwarming story of a girl who's met tragedy and decided to become good friends with it. As we look in on the Bessinger household today, Edna is fielding pop flies in the downstairs game room. It's late afternoon, and Captain Chiderbeck of the Village Fire Department's emergency unit is just arriving.
Oh, it's you, Village Fire Department Emergency Unit Captain Chiderbeck. I'm awfully glad you drove over here with your siren screaming. It lets the neighbors know I've encountered misfortune without having to go around and brag about it.
Well, of course, we answer all emergency calls with the siren turned on so we can get through traffic faster. It's not just designed to spread the news to the neighbors.
Well, you know, it's too bad we don't have some regular facility for spreading sad tidings here in the village. I wanted them to blow the whistle down at Blumenthal's Bell Factory last month so everybody would know I'd sprained my ankle, but they said they only use that whistle for civil defense alerts now.
Yes, that's true. And blowing it when it wasn't scheduled might have made the whole village think we're having an air raid.
I know, but that would have been all right. People might have rushed over here for safety. Then I could have told them about my sprained ankle. And maybe they would have all chipped in to buy me some chicken soup.
Well, I'm sure the civil defense people wouldn't run the risk of starting a panic just for that.
Well, I don't know how else to spread the word fast when our newspaper here in the village is only a weekly. I've even tried to hire old man Hoohack to work for me as a town crier, but he said he'd feel silly going all over town, ringing a bell and shouting that I had a sprained ankle.
Well, I can see how that might be his attitude, yes.
Well, I can't. In fact, I don't think it was ringing the bell and shouting that he objected to at all. He didn't back out altogether until I told him that town criers always wear knee breeches. And personally, it's my guess that Mr. Hoohack has spindly little legs that he doesn't want people to see. Would you know about that?
No, ma'am. I've never seen Mr. Hoohack's legs.
And I hope you didn't rush me over here with the whole emergency unit just to ask me that question, Miss Bennett.
No. My business is far more urgent, Village Fire Department Emergency Unit Captain Chidebeck. I seem to be expiring from strangulation. I can barely catch my breath, and for the past few hours, everything has been starting to go black.
Well, I'm not surprised to hear that. I noticed as soon as I came in that you were wearing an awfully tight piece of jewelry around your neck. Now that I see it up close, doesn't appear to be jewelry at all. Is it a collar of some kind?
Oh, great day in the morning. That's exactly what it is, Village Fire Department Emergency Unit Captain Chidebeck. And I remember now what probably caused me to put it on. I was getting dressed to take the cat for a walk this morning. And they must have thoughtlessly put my necklace on Kitty and then put her little collar around my throat.
Mm.
My, it feels better already, just unfastening that buckle. You can't know what a great help you've been, Village Fire Department Emergency Unit Captain Chidebeck. You've almost made me feel as if I'm no longer standing in the gathering dusk.
Can it be that Edna's miraculous rescue from strangulation may at last enable her to step through the doorway to happiness? Or will the realization that she must have put the cat out while it was still wearing her diamond necklace merely lead to further heartbreak? Join us for the next exciting episode when Edna may be forced to search for an overdressed kitten in the gathering dusk.
Now more Bob and Ray over WOR New York.
Welcome again to America's favorite game show, The Hollywood Stars. Thank you. Our celebrities are all in place for today's action, so let's meet the two contestants chosen at random from our studio audience to battle it out for a fortune in prizes. First, on my left, is Mrs. Pansy Warshaw of Huntington, West Virginia. Mrs. Warshaw is the former wife of a small-town druggist who now devotes her time to baking popovers. Sounds like you have a busy schedule, ma'am.
Yes, I do try to stay active.
Sure you do. And let's meet your opponent for today, Mr. Burton Metzger of Valley Park, Missouri. Mr. Metzger is a retired official of the syndicate who now drives a bakery truck in his hometown. Good to have you with us, sir.
Thank you, Barry, and you've always been my favorite show business personality, next to Danny Thomas and Earl Butts.
Well, it's great to have loyal fans like you, Mr. Metzger. Now to play our game, I believe you won the toss backstage to begin, Mrs. Washoe.
That's correct. But how can we begin before the celebrities get here?
Well, they're never with us in person, but as you can see, we have the pictures of four very famous people posted on our Hollywood Stars game board, so just go ahead and pick a celebrity, ma'am.
Well, I don't think I would have tried out for the show if I'd known I wasn't going to see any famous people in person. But I'll be a good sport and take the picture in the lower corner there. I guess it's Gabby Hayes.
No, that's E.G. Marshall before he shaved off his beard. But here's your question anyway. And remember, a correct answer will light up one of the four corners of our celebrity square. Tell me, ma'am, in what year did Columbus discover America?
Well, everybody knows that. It was 1492.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. You probably got confused because Ohio became a state in 1803, but Columbus didn't become the capital until 1812.
Well, what does that have to do with anything? You asked me when Columbus discovered America.
No, it's printed right here in my card. In what year did Columbus become the capital of Ohio? So, as I said, you just got confused. Be a good sport, won't you? Let Mr. Metzger pick a star.
Barry, I think I'll try Mickey Rooney.
Well, that's a picture of Donald O'Connor when he was still short and thin. Here's your question, sir. What is the time zone difference between New York and California?
Oh, gee, it's pretty far out there. I'd say the difference in time must be several hours, probably.
Right, you are. It's 3 hours. So that's the second corner of our celebrity square you've lit up.
Well, now, wait a minute. He didn't say anything about 3 hours difference. He just said several hours.
Exactly. And our producers verified in the New Hemisphere Dictionary that several can mean any number more than two. So be a good sport about that and pick another star, Miss Warshaw.
Oh, all right. I'll take Bob Dylan.
That's a picture of Albert Einstein. The hairdo must have confused you. So here's your question. How many home runs did Henry Aaron have to hit to beat Lou Gehrig's lifetime record?
Well, it wasn't Gehrig's record he beat. It was Babe Ruth's.
Oh, no, you probably got confused because 714 was the old record, but it took 715 to beat it.
Well, I know that, but it was Babe Ruth's old record, not Gehrig's.
Well, that wasn't even the question, so as I say, you got confused.
So let me give Mr. Metzger his next question. And, sir, you need only one more star to win the game. Pick one, will you?
I'll try the only one left, I guess, Herbert Hoover.
That's Orson Welles when he was young and wore a celluloid collar. Here's your question. What is the largest of the Great Lakes?
Oh, golly. The only Great Lake I know of is the Great Salt Lake.
Well, you just take your time before you give a definite answer, sir.
Well, he obviously doesn't know. The answer's Lake Superior.
Right, Lake Superior. So that means you've won the vacation weekend in Mexico and the complete set of snow tires, Mr. Metzger.
Well, why does he get those things? I said Lake Superior.
Well, it wasn't your turn to answer, Ms. Warshaw.
Well, I'll be.
I think you just got confused again, but you've been a good sport, and I hope we've all had as much fun today as we did. Just run along, and I'll remind the listeners to join us next time when we'll be giving away lots more prizes on the Hollywood Stars. Bye for now.
The makers of chewy cookies with seeds on the inside present another dramatic story in the crime-fighting career of Palermo. As our scene opens today, Lieutenant Palermo has just arrived at the home of wealthy playboy Bennett Cruikshank. The lieutenant thoughtfully stops in the yard to hose down his raincoat before entering. Then he steps into the house to confront Cruikshank.
It was kind of you to take a moment to see me, sir, and I'll certainly try to state my business as briefly as possible. You see, sir, I'm with the arson squad, and I'm just checking out the fire alarm you turned in last week. I need to make sure the flames weren't touched off deliberately, sir.
Well, I suppose you have to make these routine investigations, Lieutenant, but in this case, there weren't any flames at all. I called the fire department because I thought I smelled smoke, but it turned out to be a false alarm.
Oh, I see, sir. Well, then, I certainly can understand why the officers on duty at the time decided not to pursue the matter, sir. They were quite right to have closed the case when they did. Sorry to have bothered you, sir, and goodbye.
Goodbye.
Before I go, sir, there's one thing I should tell you.
Yes? What is it, Lieutenant?
Well, I always like to be completely honest, sir. It's a trait I inherited from my parents who came from the old country, rest their souls. They were very strict on that point when I was a child, sir. And I'll always be indebted to them for raising me to be a person who's not afraid to look any man in the eye.
Well, I'm sure your parents were fine people, Lieutenant. Goodbye.
Well, if you'll excuse my impertinence, sir, I still haven't told you the thing I mentioned I should tell you. As it happens, sir, I'm not really with the arson squad. I'm with homicide. And what I'm investigating is a report that your wife hasn't been seen since you had the fire, sir.
Lieutenant, there wasn't any fire. I just told you it was a false alarm.
Oh, yes, sir. That's quite true, sir. It just slipped my mind for the moment. So, of course, your wife couldn't have been killed in the fire. Thank you very much, sir, and goodbye.
Goodbye.
Oh, that does bring up one point I'd like to pursue, sir.
What point? What do you want to pursue? What?
It's about your wife, sir. Now, I have no reason at all to doubt that you didn't have a fire, sir, since I don't see any evidence of one. But that still doesn't quite explain the fact that your wife hasn't been seen for several days in this vicinity.
Lieutenant, I don't know what you're talking about. My wife couldn't be seen around here because I don't have a wife. I'm a bachelor.
Oh, I see, sir. Well, that certainly would explain the matter to my complete satisfaction. And I didn't mean to pry into your marital status, sir. I happen to have an aunt who's remained unmarried, and the life she's chosen to lead has enabled her to do some valuable research on the great apes of Central Africa. She's really a dedicated woman, and I hope you'll have a chance to meet her someday, sir.
I hope so. Now, please go. I have work to do.
I understand, sir, and I'm sorry to have bothered you. Goodbye. Oh, just one other thing, sir.
No. I don't want to hear about one other thing. No. You're already driving me off my rocker. Suppose I tell you that I set fire to this house and deliberately burned it to the ground just to cover up the murder of my wife. Would that get you off my back?
Yes, indeed it would, sir. The homicide division would be completely satisfied, and I'm sure the arson squad would be too, sir. Just let me thank you kindly for your cooperation, sir.
And so Lieutenant Palermo again pieces together a number of facts that are seemingly unrelated and uses them to trap a vicious killer. Join us again soon when Chewy Cookies with Seeds on the Inside will bring you another dramatic story in the crime-fighting career of Palermo.
I got a rose between my toes from walking barefoot through the hothouse to you. Pretty baby, I got a torn right near my corn from walking barefoot through the hothouse to you. And when I fell into the tomatoes, I seen her heart skip a beat. I knew that love was born when she pulled a torn of the flower out of my feet. I didn't even feel no pain because there wasn't any rain in the sky. Pretty baby, I didn't need no iodine because the sun began to shine upon me. For now my feet feel glad and gay. Ever since that lucky day, I got a rose between my toes from walking barefoot through the hot house to you. Because the sun began to shine upon me. For now my feet feel glad and gay. Ever since that lucky day, I got a rose between my toes from walking barefoot through the hot house to you.
You know what I want?
Now, here's the headline from the WOR newsroom. President Ford calls for a massive anti-flu vaccination to avoid epidemic next winter. Roger Skibinus will have details on that and all the news in 5 minutes at 6 o'clock.
It's time again for Bridget Hillary and the News, the heartwarming true-to-life story of a girl radio reporter who dares to tell the truth in her weekly broadcasts. As our scene opens today, Bridget's young son, Blodgett, is just entering the rehearsal room of the Amalgamated Broadcasting System.
Oh, it's you, Blodgett. I imagine I can guess why you're here.
I just came down to watch you broadcast, Mom. Gee, I'd love to watch you broadcast. You're famous, and you do such a good job, but... Well, I just love to watch it.
1 minute to air time, sorry.
All the kids at school say you're a reporter who dares to tell the truth in your hard-hitting weekly broadcast.
Blodgett, you might as well tell the truth. I know you've come here to try to persuade me not to run the story, exposing you as the leader of one of New York's most vicious juvenile gangs.
Gee, Mom, I don't belong to any juvenile gang. Between my cello and ballet lessons, I don't have time.
30 seconds to air time, sorry.
Besides, none of the gang would ask me to join. They think I'm Mickey.
Blodgett, young terrorists like you are threatening our whole society. If my expose can get the leaders behind bars, I'll consider it a job well done.
Oh, I don't want to go to a reformatory, Mom. The other kids would make mincemeat out of a fink like me.
You're on the air, sir.
You know what happens to cello players who go to the reformatory? You wouldn't want to turn in your own son on a bum rap, would you, Mom?
I know the going will be hard for you when you get in stir, Blodgett, but you should have thought of the consequences before you pulled off all those problems there in Central Park.
Well, how could I get to Central Park? You know you won't let me cross streets by myself yet.
Your program's over, Miss Hillary. When you didn't show up, they filled the time with a new record, Oh, Promise Me, by Bread.
I couldn't pull off a mugging anyway, Mom. I'm too afraid of the dark.
Blodgett, don't make it any harder for me than it already is. No mother likes to see her only child do time, but as a journalist, my first responsibility must be for the health and welfare of the American people.
And so Bridget faces the most terrible task that can confront a mother, the job of betraying her son to the police. Sure to be with us next time when we'll hear the juvenile court psychiatrist say,
Well, the kid seems normal enough, but the mother's got a fuse blown someplace.
That's in the next exciting episode of Bridget Hillary and the News.
Walter Troy Spencer. Roger Skibinus, reporting this evening for Lyle Vann. Our next news as it happens, next scheduled news at 6:30 with Lester Smith. Right here over WOR Radio 710, the talk of New York. They're back again, Bob and Ray.
And now the United States Mint, one of the nation's largest producers of authentic new money, presents another dramatic story from the files of the Emergency Ward.
Greetings and welcome. I'm Dr. Gerhard Snutten, handsome young physician who's not yet established a practice of his own. Instead, I work in the emergency ward of a big city hospital. The emergency ward is a place where the drama of human suffering unfolds day and night. Take the other evening, for example. I was spending a free moment going through some professional literature when my assistant nurse, Rudehouse, turned to me and said...
Why are you reading that girly magazine instead of finishing your reports, Doctor?
I'm evolving what I consider an important medical hypothesis, Nurse Rudehouse. It may well be that women suffer more broken legs than men simply because their legs are longer.
Well, I think women's legs just seem longer because so much of them is visible in those magazines you read. Besides, whoever said they suffer more broken legs than men?
Well, no one ever said it before, Nurse Rudehouse. That's what makes it an important medical hypothesis. Doctors don't win Nobel Prizes for discovering things that already have been discovered, you know.
Pardon me. Is this the emergency ward of a big city hospital?
Yes, it is. I'm Dr. Gerhard Snutten, handsome young physician who's not yet established a practice of his own. This tantalizing beauty at my side is Nurse Rudehouse.
Pleased to meet you. I'm bent over so bad that all I can see is your feet, but I'll reach up and you can shake hands if you want.
Well, I think it'd be more manly if you'd straighten up and look me squarely in the eye, sir.
Well, I'd like to do that more than anything, Doc, but I was trying to unload a piano at the store across the street, and all of a sudden I felt something snap in my back, and now I can't straighten up.
I see. Well, it's too bad you didn't come to me several months ago. You know, deposits of calcium between the vertebrae are what cause the back to stiffen. The condition is hard to treat when you let it go so long.
Well, Doctor, he said he just threw his back out a few minutes ago. I don't see how he could have come to you any sooner.
Nurse Rudehouse, the mere fact that we often share a cozy booth in the hospital cafeteria does not change our relationship on duty. And it's obvious that large amounts of calcium in the spine don't accumulate in a matter of minutes.
Well, I can't imagine how you got off on this thing about calcium deposits. Lifting a piano can throw anybody's back out of kilter.
So can playing professional football. This man doesn't even appear to be the athletic type. So you can see how unscientific your diagnosis is.
Pardon me, but if you people are planning a long squabble, I think I'll take a little walk for myself. My legs are starting to stiffen up, too.
Oh, very well. I'll be wanting to send you down for complete x-rays shortly. Nurse Rudehouse, phone radiology on the direct emergency line and tell him to prepare the...
Hey, look what happened.
Yes, quite obvious what happened. You banged your head into the wall because you weren't watching where you're going. And the vibration caused my handsome framed diploma to fall and smash.
Well, I'm sorry about all the broken glass, but look how the bump made my back unlock. I can stand up straight again.
Well, I don't see what's so surprising about that. It's pulling up on a piano that caused your condition to begin with. So a hard push back down would be the prescribed treatment for unlocking the vertebrae.
Hey, it's clever of you to think of that. What do I owe you, Doc?
Well, it'll cost at least $3 for new glass in that frame. Well, there won't be any charge for the x-rays we haven't taken yet.
Okay. Well, look, here's $3. I'm much obliged. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Nurse Rudehouse, you just watched another critically ill person walk out of here in good health, thanks to the wonders of medical science. So, you may simply write the entry in your casebook, patient released, cured.
And so ends another heartwarming story of mankind's conquest of disease. Join us again soon when the United States Mint, producer and distributor of money, will bring you another equally dramatic story from the files of the emergency ward.
Let's introduce a couple of our fine-looking audience members, beginning with this lady here. Could I have your name, ma'am?
I'm Ms. Weldon Crimmett of Middlebury, Vermont.
What brings you to New York, Miss Crimmett?
Well, I run a little business back there in Middlebury. I make feather dusters, and I come to New York about once a year to buy supplies.
You get the feathers here in New York, do you?
Feathers, lumber for the handles, and things like that.
You sell quite a few of these dusters, do you?
Well, I haven't sold one in 3 or 4 years. I've got the garage and the whole upstairs of the house filled with them.
No, I hope business picks up soon for you.
Well, I hope so, too. I'd hate to have to go out and rent warehouse space.
Yeah. Thank you for talking with us. Let's move along. To the other side of the group, over here. So much noise, I don't know whether we can hear our next guest. What are you doing there, sir?
I'm putting up a letterbox here in the corner. I'll be finished in a minute. I don't want to wait just a second.
All right. I notice this letterbox is orange with purple stripes. Is the government going in for a new color scheme or what?
Oh, I'm not with the government. I run my own postal system.
You're going to compete with our present mail system, you mean?
That's right. I figure that private enterprise can always undersell the government. For example, my postcards are priced at 2 for a penny. I handle regular letters for 2 cents, airmail for 4.
Well, you able to show a profit at those cut rates? I don't see how.
Well, I'm just getting started. I still deliver all the mail myself, and what with train and airplane fares, what they are, I'm going into the red pretty deeply right now, but I figure once the volume starts to build up, the profits will roll in, too.
Yeah, and of course, you get to travel a lot. That's a nice part of it. You have the expense of printing your own stamps, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you have any samples with you we could describe?
Well, here's a 2-center. It has a picture of my wife on it. She doesn't look that good in real life.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a 3. Now, that's my grandfather before he shaved off his beard. And here's an airmail. That's my youngest boy on there.
See, he has wings.
Well, he doesn't really have wings. I just had those drawn in so people would know it's an airmail stamp.
Sure. Well, I'm glad I ran into you. You remind me, I've been carrying a letter around all day, forgetting to mail it. I'd be glad to let you handle it for me.
Let's see. Airmail to Chicago. That'll be 4 cents.
All right. Here's the money.
Thank you. Listen, I better get right out to LaGuardia. You know, with this, I'll have to arrange for my reservations after I get there.
Right.
Taxi! Taxi!
And now back to the great stage.